I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you want to know a podcast that mixes chat and comedy? Yeah, it's Park Date. It's on now. Listen. Welcome to Park Date. Here at Pershing Square Park, downtown Los Angeles, which I thought was an apt place to introduce this episode because today's guest is from Los Angeles, though now she lives in Brooklyn. She is a member of two-thirds of a threesome, and she puts on a night in New York called Fake Birthday, where she has her friends like Ilana Glazer from Broad City and loads of other cool people performing. She's got an album called The Writing on the Store, which is also the title of a show that she did at Edinburgh. She does great music and great comedy. It is, of course, Caitlin Cook. We chatted in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, and you're going to hear that chat right now. If you're in New York, you should check out her stuff. She's always putting things on in Brooklyn and Manhattan. And as always, if you like Park Date, please do like, subscribe, and review us. The best review wins a prize. Follow us on socials at Park Date Podcast. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to Prospect Park in Brooklyn. I'm here with Caitlin Cook. Hi, Caitlin.
You sounded unsure of my name for a
second. I was giving it the gravitas that it needed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
In the words of Esther Perel, where should we begin?
Oh, my goodness. Go listen to her podcast, too, after yeah. You're done with this one. She's so great.
She's so great. I was thinking, this is such a nice part, by the way. There was a... Did you see the busker when we arrived?
No, oh, yeah.
He was quite good, I thought.
He was good. There's a lot of concerts. Yeah. Buskers around Prospect Park. There were a ton during the pandemic.
Yeah.
There was like a jazz trio that would be here all the time with horns and a drum circle.
I love that.
Yeah, it was great.
I just had a thought, Caitlin.
Yeah.
You know, with that guy, he was quite good, but he was just playing to no one. And he
yes.
was very, very comfortable just playing music.
Yes.
While no one was listening.
Yes.
Have you ever seen a stand-up comedian just doing material?
Yes, I have.
With a bucket,
trying
to get dollars, and no one's listening.
Yes,
really.
It's really uncomfortable.
It wasn't you, was it?
No, it was not me. No, I've definitely bussed musically before, but that's just like practicing songs that you're gonna play that evening outside, and sometimes people give you money. But I've definitely seen in Edinburgh at the Fringe. Because there's so many people milling about, comedians busking, and then at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, I also saw this happening, and it's awkward.
So people just do material, and no one's listening.
No one's listening. No one has any context. Unless you're doing one-liners, it like doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And even then, it's like still kind of weird.
Yeah, right.
Like people, like I think it's embarrassing to laugh even if the jokes are good at someone you're just walking by.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Very silly.
Yeah. Because with some, I mean, maybe no one listens to the podcast, but you never know.
Yeah.
But if you're performing and no one's, what is it like busking when you've done musical busking? Was that
fun? Fine. Yeah, I like it a lot. I've done it. I did it when I was living in Oxford. I've done it on the subway. It's not like my favorite thing to do, but if I have a show that night and I want to run through a lot of songs, and I happen to be like on the road, rather than like running through shit in my hotel room,
yeah,
or like I might be disturbing other people around me trying to sleep, I'm like, I'll go find a nice park or like a nice area where there's like a crowd and I'll practice and then I'll earn a little bit of money and maybe some people will come to the show and it's fun. It's more fun to do with other people.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'll like do when I have my bandmates. Yes. I love being alone, but everything's more fun with other people.
Absolutely. Well, so I often hear people like play musical instruments in the hotel room next door to me. Is that often you?
It's me. I've been stalking you for a long time and I always get the hotel room next to you. I'm really glad we finally met in person.
Oh my God. It was you all along. How did you find... Well, we're talking about Edinburgh. You were at Edinburgh this year, weren't you?
Yeah.
How did you find that experience?
You know, it's funny. People keep asking here in New York, and I feel like people who've never been to the Fringe, there's too much context, so I'm like, it was great. And then we move on. But, like, it was great, and it was also horrible, and it was amazing and exhausting and exhilarating. And, you know, it's like... It's performer boot camp.
Yeah.
It's summer camp. It's... Groundhog Day, you know, you're doing your hour every day at the same room at the same time, and then you're going to, you know, schmooze with whoever, and then you're doing more late night spots. And
well, that's what we were talking about before, wasn't it? About those late night.
Those are so fun.
Yeah, that sounds like I always enjoyed late and live and those kind of things where it's all a bit more. More relaxed and chaotic.
Yeah. Can I tell you?
No.
I don't think...
You can't tell that. Whatever you're going to say, you can't say it.
Okay. Well, I'll tell a different story then.
No. Let's do it.
I had the most fun at the late night spots because, like, you're performing with other comedians. The pressure isn't all on you to do your full hour.
Yeah.
And it feels more like a comedy showcase. Like you would in New York. So I did a bunch. I did one, like I told you the other day, with Chris O'Dowd was in the audience. And that was really cool. And then he bought me a drink afterwards.
Yeah. Like, what was Chris O'Dowd like?
He was lovely. He's exactly how you think he... Yeah.
He seems like such a nice guy,
Such a nice guy. And then I did one where I was doing this show called ACMS, which is, like, super fringy and alt-y people and, like, really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
Starts at midnight. I had previously in the evening taken mushrooms.
Hold on. This is the first time anyone so openly admitted to that kind of thing.
I love mushrooms. They are my drug. I help facilitate mushroom ceremonies for people that haven't done it before.
Did you take mushrooms today?
No. No, I did not. But I love mushrooms, and I was given some mushrooms by a friend that were in capsules, and normally I eat them in, like, chocolate or, like, a tea.
Yeah, I have a friend. Well, I probably shouldn't say this, but I have a friend. Well, I don't know why we're talking about this. I have a friend who makes those chocolates.
Oh, nice!
And puts mushrooms in them.
Yeah,
hello.
I have a lot of friends that grow them.
Redacted.
Who cares? Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I don't typically do capsules of mushrooms.
Right. So were you?
So I was like, no, I was not, and I was like, interesting. Okay, I guess like either. It was a much smaller amount than I normally take, or like they're just not hitting me, or whatever. So I had like a drink or two, and I get on stage, and they said they were gonna put me up first, they didn't. So it's like maybe 2 a.m. at this point.
Yeah.
And I get on stage, and they hit me. And I look down, and I'm holding like 6 guitars in my hands, and I don't know how to play anything. And I have this one bit where
that's such a great image.
I was like, oh, like, no.
Which one?
So my friend Grace is in the crowd with me, and she, I have this one bit where I have like graffiti projected behind me that are the lyrics of the song, and I have a foot pedal that's... stick attack us.
Yeah.
I have a foot pedal that like is used by orchestral instrumentalists when they need to turn pages of sheet music on their iPad.
Right.
That I use to show graffiti and tell dick jokes.
Is that what Mozart used when he was turning the pages on his iPad?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Actually, no, I think it was Bach.
Right.
But so I give Grace my foot pedal because I'm like, there's no way that I can operate 6 guitars and this foot pedal, but I like cannot get through this song. Like, even with Grace helping me, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I tell the audience almost immediately, I'm like, the mushrooms have just hit me, just so you know, this is terrifying.
Well, I mean, I bet, no, in Edinburgh, they just laughed.
They loved it.
They probably thought, oh, this is a bit.
But
little did they realize you actually...
I then attempt to do another song that I cannot line up like where the melody is with the six guitars in my hands. And then I'm like, okay, guys. And I'm still crushing. That's the weirdest part. I'm murdering this set. But I have completely gone off the rails.
Yeah.
The last song that I try to do, my muscle memory kicks in. And it's like this really intricate finger-picky song that has this long intro. So I do this crazy long intro and the audience is like rapt. They're like, oh my God, she got it. Yes, amazing. Yeah. And then I completely forget the lyrics, cannot remember how to start the song. They lose their minds. I get off stage and I'm like so apologetic to the producers. I feel like I've done a really unprofessional job. But
they were loving it.
They loved it. Yeah. And in fact, my friend Brian, filmed the entire thing and came up to me afterwards and was like, that was the best stand-up set I've seen ever.
So the lesson we learned from this, kids, is just say yes to drugs.
No, the lesson I learned was, because I used to be such an overwritten performer and so controlling of what I did on stage, the lesson for me was, even when I've lost all of my capabilities of control, I can still crush, and also never do mushrooms again on stage. Those are my takeaways. So there's still a video of this somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't watch it. I will die in a sea of cringe. Well, but, yeah.
And that makes me think, I did an improv class at Second City, and I wonder if maybe these days, when they start that class, they say, here's your mushrooms.
Yes,
It's time to microdose.
Release control.
Exactly. Probably increases your ability to improvise. Though, those improv set, when everyone's on mushrooms.
Oh my God.
Like, the surrealism would be taken to the next level.
Totally.
It would become ridiculous.
I do think the audience has to microdose a little bit too, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a moment in Edinburgh that sums up how Edinburgh was for me.
Yeah, that's Edinburgh. That's Edinburgh.
Release control. Do crazy shit on stage at 2 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How was last night? You saw Ilana Glazer last night, didn't you?
Yeah, so I went to the show that's every Monday at a venue called Littlefield in Gowanus.
Gowanus.
And it was great. It's a great weekly show. It's run by Aparna Nancherla, Joe Firestone, and Maeve Higgins. And then, Ilana was on it.
Ilana from Broad City, of course.
Ilana Glazer from Broad City. My co-producer of one of my shows, Tom Takar, who's done like a bunch of Comedy Central stuff, was on it. A bunch of really fun people. And it's always a show where like I'll go if I don't have any other shows on Monday and I want to hang out, and I'll run into like 10 different friends.
Yeah.
And my friend Marianne is the producer, Marianne Ways, and then my friend Gabe runs the venue.
Yeah, so. Didn't you say there were some SNL writers you're friends with
as
well?
Yeah, I was hanging out with Nick Kosher, who was also in Edinburgh with me. He's one half of the sketch group Britannic, and they wrote for SNL for a while, and he brought some of his SNL writer friends. I know more people that are writers than the people on the screen at this point.
Was it like an SNL support group? Like we've all survived.
We've all survived.
Just.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny the people that stay for a really long time and the people that get churned out after a season.
Yeah, obviously, no one would say no to if someone's calling. Like, would you like to write for SNL? You're never going to say no, but you do hear some stories of, like, not just that show. Like, it's probably unfair to just pick on that, but I think a lot of those like high octane, high pressure TV shows, it sounds like it's quite hard to work on them, right?
Yeah.
You hear some horror stories.
Yeah,
and if your jokes don't land, you get fired, right?
Yeah, and I think like there's especially a high turnover rate with like late night and SNL and stuff. I have had a lot of friends that have written for a season that like had an awful time, and a lot of friends that it really fits with their personality or their work ethic. And sometimes like people just don't vibe. You could be like the best late night writer in the world and you don't like your showrunner, or it just doesn't work. So.
Yeah. And I guess with those things as well, you're having to really write on the hoof. So if you're the kind of writer or comedian that likes to be meticulous and kind of edit stuff, you can't always... You know, I always, when I'm in the US, I'm watching like The Tonight Show, especially, and Jimmy Kimmel and Colbert as well. And you know, you think that they've written those jokes basically in like an hour that afternoon, right?
A lot of
they read the paper, well, not paper. They look online. They're like, okay, you've got like an hour to write some jokes. Like, you're basically like on the clock.
A lot of late night shows, you have to submit like 60 to 90 jokes by noon every day.
Well, hold on, 90 jokes by noon.
Yes.
I've not even got up at noon.
So
this would be a big problem. I was thinking I could work on late night because I don't like mornings. It'd be perfect. But
no, they get up. They like you have to be in the office at like 9 or 10 a.m. Or like sometimes it's remote now. But
well, if Lauren comes calling over, I might have to say no.
Yeah. Well, SNL schedule is nuts too.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Exactly.
It's weird when like my friends that work on it will just disappear when the season starts.
Right.
And then it ends, and then they're like, "Hey, hello, I'm back."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess it kind of consumes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Everything. So yeah, that sounds like a fun night. What was what kind of stuff was Alana talking about? I've never seen her do.
She's got a good stand-up special. Yeah. She's sort of just talking about like being a mom. She's mm-hmm. a new mom, and she's working on some new stuff. She's going to do my show.
Right, which is called
Fake Birthday. Yeah, so we're starting
Fake
it.
Birthday.
It's been a monthly for a while, and now we're doing it as a weekly at Asylum, which is in Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And we're starting that on my writing partner's real birthday, which is November 15th.
Right.
And we're going to like be doing different bits and songs in between all of the performers and having on like stand-ups plus Broadway people plus clowns and...
So that's a different show. So when I saw you guys in Union Hall.
Yes, that's a different show. So I produced two shows.
Yeah.
One is Fake Birthday. That one I host with my writing partner. His name is AJ Holmes. He started Book of Mormon for a long time. He's a Broadway guy. And then the other one I produced with Tom Dekar and Shane Torres, who are both like Comedy Central, Conan stand-ups. Yeah. And that one's more like less variety, more stand-up heavy.
Yeah.
But Tom is moving to L.A., and Shane's on the road a lot, so I feel like I have the power to kind of shift it in any direction at this point.
You can do it anywhere you want. And you were saying that like Alana lives near you, doesn't she?
She lives down the block.
Is it basically like locals only? Like only your only your neighbors are allowed to kind of come on that show, right?
Yeah, yeah. I only book people that live on my block. Weirdly, my writing partner also lives on my block.
Yeah.
So that's the rules for the show.
There's like a little comedy neighborhood, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I just ran into Josh Gondelman, who is the head writer for John Oliver for a long time, and then Deesa Samero. I ran into him in my neighborhood. Like, a lot of like my favorite comics are a 5 to 10 minute bike ride away from me.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
Except for all those that live in Manhattan. Gross.
Yeah, why would you do that?
You're closer to the clubs. If you're a club comic, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, but yeah, Brooklyn. Well, so we're in Prospect Park now.
Yeah,
designed by the same people as Central Park.
Yes.
But yeah, even more bucolic, you might say. Feels like you could be in the English countryside. I feel very at home here.
Yeah,
looks kind of English, doesn't it?
It does feel like.
Reminds you of Oxford a little bit.
Yes, and it kind of feels like Hampstead Heath a bit. But
it is
less,
a bit like Hampstead Heath.
There's like some overgrown areas.
People aren't as posh here as in Hampstead Heath, though.
No, and there's no swimming lake pool things.
Yeah, which I'm sad about. There needs to be more pools. Yeah. I would dive straight in.
Yeah, I don't know if there's like a real sort of like in the landscape type pool in New York. There's gotta be somewhere.
There's
McCarran.
McCarran, yeah, of course. I was gonna say, which is the hugest. Hugest. Well, I'll just say it anyway. Pool I've ever seen. I think it's got space for about 5,000 people or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is one at the top of Central Park, but I went to go and have a swim there, and they were doing. This is very boring. I don't know why I've even. You know when you start saying something, you're like,
Have to finish it.
And now I've sort of.
Now I'm very curious.
I've drawn attention to how boring it is. So I could have just said it, and we could have moved on, and it could have just been left in the past. But I've made it even worse by drawing attention to it. But yeah, it was just they were kind of doing building work, and their pool is, I think, being restored or something.
Oh, nice. By this pool.
There's a pool here.
It's for the dogs. This is an off-leash dog area. So I don't know if you want to swim with doggies.
Dogs only. Yeah. I mean, I would be happy to swim with the dogs. But yeah, maybe it's not such a good idea. So you were saying this is one of your favorite, your favorite park, right?
It's my favorite park, yeah. There's a lot of great parks in New York, but this one I've always lived near. I've lived in New York for almost 8 years.
What do you like especially about Prospect Park, Caitlin? What's your favorite?
I think
favorite
you know
things about it?
I was here a lot during the pandemic, and I was still finding new areas of the park.
It's massive, isn't it?
It's really, really big.
In fact,
I'm
lost.
You can kind of get lost in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
you can definitely get lost in it. as Chris is right now.
Yeah.
There's always like some area for something. There's like a dog area. I've gotten a bottle of wine and played chess here. Like I've had birthday parties here. We're walking by some baseball courts right now. Fields.
Yeah, I love it when you see the kids playing Little League.
Yeah.
Very, very cute. I'm gonna pull you on the wine plus chess.
Yes.
Memory.
Yeah.
You're performing stand up.
Yeah.
Having taken mushrooms,
yes.
And you're playing chess when you're drunk. What kind of person are you?
I think I'm a pretty cool person. If I heard someone on a podcast talking about doing all these things, I would want to be their friend.
What is your mum or your mom, as we're in America, going to think about this? You're like, Caitlin, can't you just play chess sober?
She probably would say something like that. And I'd be like, yes, I can, mom. But also, there happened to be wine there.
Yeah. I love that. That kind of mix, that mixture of wine and chess, I think, is really good.
And it was like, it was a nice Lambrusca, you know?
Yeah. What are your views on chess and the hip-hop world?
Chess and the hip-hop world.
You know it's very big in hip-hop.
I did not know that.
Yep. Yep.
That kind of makes sense.
Because
go to, like, there's certain parks and areas in New York that are, like, in... I always see, like, old men in, like, Bed-Stuy playing chess.
Yeah.
It's, like, very much a part of those, like, old neighborhoody cultures.
Yeah, I love it, exactly, when you see those old guys playing chess or... there's a park in Chinatown, you can see them playing like checkers. And
yeah, in Washington Square Park, there's a path that has a bunch of chess boards on it.
Are you good at chess?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
I would say I don't have the patience to like learn all the strategic moves that I should, but I'm good enough to beat like most people that know how to play chess.
Yeah. Maybe that would be an interesting podcast. Should
like
we?
Should we get a chessboard right now?
Right. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do a podcast where we play a game of chess, and then we can be talking while we're doing it.
But it does feel like you could like. It feels like there's a little bit of strategy there where you could engage someone in a really riveting conversation to throw them off their game.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which I would definitely do.
Yeah. Use any tactics at your disposal.
Yeah. One of the other things that's amazing about this park is there's a band shell.
Should we go look at it?
And they have like a summer series of concerts, and they've had on Street Dive and Phoenix.
Yes.
And like,
yes, of course.
There's some really fun shows that like, I don't know. It feels like some sort of higher level institutions will only have like opera and like ballet, and like that's great that there's a place for that too. But I think what I love about the Prospect Park Band Shell series is it's like it's not just classical music.
Yeah,
it's a lot of
fun shit.
That
is what.
What kind of technical definition?
You know when people say, "What kind of music do you like?"
Yeah,
fun shit.
Fun shit. I like fun shit. That's a great band name. Thank you, Detroit. We are fun shit.
That could be. Yeah, that's a great band. That is a great band name. Exactly. In fact, it would surprise me if that hasn't been.
Hasn't been taken.
Fun shit. Yeah, exactly. I love it when people say that. Yeah, what kind of music do you like?
I never know what to answer. You know what's funny? Most people's answers is everything except they tell you music that they don't like in their answer to that question.
Yeah. What food do you like? Well,
I don't like Turkish.
I don't like African food. I don't like Asian food. What do you like? Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Why don't we talk about music for a bit?
We talk about
comedy so much, but music
is
also a big part of
my life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we mentioned briefly the other day, didn't we, about we're talking about Regina Spektor and Ben Folds and the idea of like people who are kind of being more ambitious, right, in their lyrics.
Yeah.
Like telling stories and sometimes being funny and stuff.
Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
I love people that can be humorous in their lyrics.
Yeah.
I love, you know, like there's a lot of sort of singer-songwriters I grew up with that have now like built musicals that have gone to Broadway. Like Sarah Bareilles was working on Waitress and Anais Mitchell with Hadestown. And like I think it's really cool when you can tell a story within a verse or a song or like a whole album that can be translated into something more theatrical.
Yeah.
That being said, I definitely, you know, there's some music I like that has no lyrics at all, but it's rare. I like really lock into the lyrics, whereas like other people are like, oh my God, that bass line. And I'm like, I was not paying attention to it whatsoever, but cool for you.
What were the artists or bands that were really speaking to you when you were younger? When you were getting really excited about music?
Yeah, I mean, so I've written songs. I wrote my first song when I was like 4 years old about my cats. It was
I hope a you still perform that.
I have it in, I think I like found a recording of it for one of my like earlier Edinburgh shows. It's very cute. But yeah, I've written songs forever, and then I just like got into music from a young age. My mom is a choreographer, so she's always trying to search for interesting music to choreograph to. My brother was in like all of the jazz bands, and like we were actually in a Motown band together in college. And then my grandpa invented the wah pedal.
Wait, hold on a second. Your granddad invented the wah pedal? Well, that's a brilliant, brilliant thing to invent.
Yes.
And he must have been very proud. You must be very proud of him.
I am. And he wasn't like a musician either. He just liked to take things apart and put them back together in odd ways. But so I grew up surrounded by interesting music, going to concerts all the time.
We can't let that go, though, can we? It's like, you ever have a conversation with your parents? They just drop something. I love my parents very much if they're listening. But they do have a tendency to dwell on certain things and say like, oh, the traffic was bad, the parking was bad.
Yes.
We went to the supermarket. Your brother's had a baby today. and then the traffic was bad as well.
Yes.
Hold on.
Maybe, the baby part.
Right. You just dropped in something very important into the conversation.
Yes.
But yeah, I wonder what happened before the wah pedal. I mean, that's really changed. That's changed music.
Yeah.
Your granddad changed music.
He did. A lot of like really cool bands used it. Unfortunately, he didn't like, is it Peyton or Patton? I always forget. He didn't copyright it very well. So I'm not swimming in money or anything. Aww. I'm not a trust fund kid, but I am proud of my lineage.
It's great. No, that's great. That's a really cool.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were talking about musicals as well. So
yes.
I imagine, Caitlin, that you... Well, I mean, you have written a musical, haven't you? That you
performed. At this point I've written...
The Writing on the Stool.
Like my two full hour Edinburgh shows were like kind of one person musicals.
Yeah.
And then I also co-wrote and directed my writing partner's show that was at the Soho Playhouse, which we like even billed as a one man musical.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to write a larger musical.
Yeah, I can see you doing this, right?
I've only recently had like more specific ideas about it.
Yeah.
Because right now what's really popular is jukebox musicals, which is using an artist's like taking a movie or using an artist's sort of repertoire and putting that into a musical.
Yeah, Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Tina Turner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
There's like not a lot of original ideas that are getting onto the Broadway stage, which is understandable because to get something on there is all about money and investing, and people invest in things that they know people are going to show up to, which is something familiar
to them
already.
Something they know, yeah.
But I would like to write something. I definitely have enough contacts with like smaller off-Broadway theaters that I could, if I have the right script and the right people around me, which I'm starting to, which is really cool. Like one of my business partners was the drummer for Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway and is Jason Robert Brown's drummer.
Yeah.
Who's my favorite composer, musical theater composer. There's my network is starting to get there. So that is like the eventual goal.
Yeah. I think that would be so cool to have a musical, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm working towards it. There's a lot of projects in the works, and I got to figure out where to put my energy.
Exactly. Obviously, don't give too much away,
because yeah.
People might listen and steal your idea. But would you be at liberty, Caitlin, to maybe talk about a theme or an idea that might become.
Well, no one's going to steal this idea because it's very clearly mine. But so for like 10 years, I've been photographing bathroom stall graffiti, and like maybe 5 years ago, I wrote the first graffiti song in which all of the lyrics are from bathroom stalls, and I project them behind me, and it like crushed. Like I did it at Edinburgh in 2019. I was getting like standing ovations. I was like, oh, there's something here.
Yeah.
Like I thought that this was just a nerdy thing I like to do, but like it's, everyone's been in a dive bar seeing graffiti.
Of course.
And thought about it. So I realized like the universal pull of that. And so the show that I did at Edinburgh this year, all the songs were bathroom stall graffiti songs. And there was one that was like men's versus women's stalls.
Yeah.
There was one that was like people responding to each other on the stalls. There was one that was like all the sad poetic shit. There was one that was like the shitty, awful slut shaming stuff.
Yeah.
And like just across the board. And then there was like a toilet on stage, and I treated the audience like we were women bonding in a bathroom. And there was like a story and a through line of like why I was hiding in the bathroom. And I liked that show. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, it would be more interesting. I like a show that's set in like one location.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really interesting to write like a larger musical with like a bunch of people in this bathroom.
Yeah.
And like the goings on of like, is there a party outside? Like, why are they in here? What are they hiding from? Like, what are they talking about? What's the goss? You know?
I think that's a great idea. Maybe you could do it in the women's toilets, the ladies' room, as you say here, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's a world of I've just seen absolutely enormous group of kids coming towards us.
Oh yeah, we're about to get wrapped up. Should we go off this path?
Let's go. There's about 100 children
also,
running towards
us. Where's the fan shelf from here? I'm a little turnaround.
I can't work out where it is. Yeah, let's go and look at that because it'll be cool.
Yes.
Yeah, there's so many children.
There's so many children
running towards us.
Okay, we're about to. We're
yeah,
okay,
let's
right
yeah
now.
Let's go. Let's go and look over there. Yeah, I feel like. Obviously, I don't know because I've never really been in women's toilets, but I feel like there's a sense of camaraderie,
there
community.
There is. Like, a lot of men after the show were like, oh my God, I never experienced this before.
Girls big up each other, don't they? They're
yes.
like, oh, you look great. Your boobs look brilliant in that dress, all that kind of thing.
Yes. it's very fun.
Yeah.
To like bond with, there's a joke in the show, but I say like, I can't tell you how many Ashleys from the bathroom I have stored in my phone that I never once texted, but they were my best friend
right,
that night.
Yeah.
Like, there is, yeah, that sense of bonding.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be great. You should definitely do that.
Yeah, so I'm working on that. I have, like, a episodic TV show idea where it's just focused on one piece of graffiti every episode and, like, why that person wrote that. And it's, like, set in the same dive bar and, like, I'm scripting that out right now. So I have a lot of projects in the works.
I love that too. Yeah.
They're not all graffiti based.
No, that's good. That's a great one though. That's a great one.
They painted it. So, the bandshell. Sorry for listeners. We're staring at the bandshell now.
Yeah. What, that dog? Yeah.
They painted the dog.
This is the Lena Horn band shell.
Yes.
Any relation to Alex Horn? Who knows?
No idea. Don't know who Lena Horn is. Sorry, Lena.
Yeah, I love how everything's named after people in America as well.
Yeah.
That's actually...
well, it's usually the person that's like, here's the money, now let me slap
my name on it. Is
that what
it is? Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
Or it's their family that's like, oh, they passed away, we want something.
As a memory.
For them.
What would be the Caitlin Cook... The Caitlin Cook bathroom. Right on the wall.
Oh my God. You know what's so funny? It's like in Edinburgh, I was trying to figure out how to get people into my room outside of just like standard flyering and stuff.
Yeah.
And I
when
put
you
up...
say room, you mean the room where you're performing, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How to get people into my room.
Where you're staying.
Sorry, my venue. And I just ended up putting a bunch of posters in the toilets. And I asked people as they were leaving, like, how did you find out about my show? And a bunch of people were like, I saw it in the toilet. It's like, that's so perfect.
People are looking.
Yeah, it was on theme.
Yeah, people are looking. But yeah, so the band show here is very, like, neon.
Yeah. It's nice. It used to be just grey.
I'll take a photo. Have you seen anyone perform here?
Yeah, I saw Lake Street Dive here. Mm. My writing partner performed here as part of this musical theater thing called LC Fest. And I've seen Phoenix.
Phoenix played here. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really fun. They sort of, like, section off this whole area and then... But it's funny because it's like it's a park, so you could buy tickets and get in and hang out and have beer, or you could just be on the outside area and still watch the band and like listen to everything.
Yeah.
So, shall we wander?
Yeah, let's wander. Let's wander. Yeah, I need to come back and see a show here.
Yeah, it's, most of the summer. Here.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's very nice.
I think that we were talking about musicals, weren't we? That mix of like music. Like music, lyrics, comedy, there's kind of a, like you're sort of sitting in the middle of that really, aren't you?
Yeah, I love that little sort of Venn diagram area. And sometimes I wish that I could have just chosen a more direct path, like I'm just doing stand-up, or I'm just doing music, or I'm just in musical theater, but I can't seem to pick.
Yeah.
So I just keep doing what I'm doing.
I think it's great though when people can do so many different things, you know, when you see... there's so many people who can do maybe music, acting, writing, comedy, directing, and then maybe they open a, you'd be like Kanye or something, have all these like little sidelights, bizarre like business ideas and stuff.
That would definitely be me.
Clothing line.
Yeah, if I had a lot of money, I would get involved in too many things, so it's probably good that I'm poor.
What would be, would you have like a sort of pet business if you inherited the wah pedal legacy, suddenly they're like, actually we owe you $1 million.
Oh my God, amazing.
You had to like set up a business or something, what would you do?
I'd probably open a venue, actually.
Yeah
I would love to. I love performing a ton, but I also really love co-writing and directing and producing. And I would love the idea of like having a space that, yes, I could do my own shows at, but I could also like highlight up and coming people with like really cool, interesting projects and kind of support people that might not have a home for whatever kind of performance they want to do.
Yeah, that would be so cool to have a venue, wouldn't it?
And you could love that.
You could make it exactly how you wanted it.
Yeah, there was this church in like little chapel in Bed-Stuy that was up for sale for a while, and I was like, ooh, it's got low ceilings. It's got carpet on the ground. You got to rip that up. It's got pews still, but like, I wonder how the acoustics are. And it was too expensive, obviously, but it would have been cool.
That would be so cool. I love those converted venues as well. Like something used to be,
something else. There's like a decent amount in the UK, I feel like, of like converted churches that have become venues.
There's a lot. There was at my old university, there was a church that got turned into a nightclub.
Leeds. I know it's a podcast and you should be asking me questions, but I'm going to ask you questions.
And that puts you into the next level of guest, Caitlin, because only the coolest guests ask me questions.
Yeah, like when we were talking about music, I was like, well, tell me about your taste in music. But I don't know if you've talked about that on the podcast before.
I don't know if I have. Well, I was saying, I immediately said to you about Ben Folds, who I am a huge fan of.
I love Ben Folds.
And I think his...
Remember when he was doing the chat roulette thing?
What was that? I don't know if I remember that.
He was like at his shows, he had like chat roulette behind him on a big projector.
Oh,
and so it was very funny because sometimes it would just be like a dick.
Yeah.
But sometimes it would be someone that was like, holy shit, I'm at a Ben Folds concert right now.
Right. Yeah. No, that is such a great thing. What I love about Ben Folds concerts, I don't know if you've noticed this, if you, when you've seen him live, there's always been a proposal. I think I've seen like 5 times. There's like 5 proposals.
I mean, that does feel like a band that you bond over with a partner.
Or break up to. I have to say, I do kind of associate a lot of those songs with horribly painful breakups.
I'm drowning slowly.
That's the... Right. I'm going to have to pay about £100 now you sung that lyric.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sing another bit as well. But yeah, no, that's a great song. But yeah, I think they're quite romantic songs. Yeah. An ideal place for a proposal.
I think so, yeah. If you're going to propose... I don't mind a proposal at a concert. I think that's sweet.
And yeah, we were talking about like music and lyrics as well. I think one thing that I liked with Ben Folds is the collaborations that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you listened to the one that he did with Nick Hornby, who is a writer who I really, really love.
Didn't he write About a Boy? Is that Nick Hornby?
He did write About a Boy, exactly. And he wrote an album of songs for Ben Folds. And Ben Folds
That's really cool.
Did the music.
I would love to do something like that.
I was literally going to say, wouldn't that be really cool?
Yes.
That kind of like Bernie Taupin and Elton John dynamic.
I think all right, really... so you're going to write something for me to turn into a song?
I was literally going to say, shall I write the lyrics?
Yeah.
I've never written a song before. I'll write the lyrics. You do the music.
Okay. I'm going to probably put in some of my own lyrics, though, because I can't help myself.
You can put in your own lyrics. The song could be about seltzer water.
Okay.
How about that?
I like it.
Right, there's more children.
There's more children.
Why is there so many children?
They're all in running club.
Ugh, is it running? It's running club. Right.
Just
oh my god.
Me being like, Caitlin, you should run more, and I'm like, I hate running.
Right, there's. I have never seen so many running children in my life. Is that like a thing here?
This has never happened to me before.
I mean, obviously, when you're in Scotland, you'll have noticed
that
children don't exercise. they just go. They basically go to Greg's. But in the rest,
they just go to the pub.
You rather go to exactly. Yeah, school.
So Scottish children are all.
Yeah, school break time in Scotland. Go to the pub.
I'm feeling like, what is it, October? Yeah, I feel like it must just be like an after-school running club type thing.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, isn't it?
I'll give it back to you. I'm not a fan. That would not be the club I would join in school.
Did you have to do... We had to do running in school, and I actually hated it. But then I found it... I found it again later in life.
I don't mind, like, when I'm dog-sitting, I don't mind jogging with a dog.
Yeah.
I don't mind jogging to a destination. I just don't like jogging to nowhere for no reason.
Right. So track and field athletics would be your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Just running around in circles over and over again with no destination.
We had like, PE and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, I typically got out of it by the time I got to high school by going to my mom's dance classes, which were, like, out of college and getting college credit.
Yeah.
But... We did have, like, everyone had to run the mile.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you got a good grade was improving on your time. But no one told you that at the beginning, so everyone is running the mile really fast the first time. And then you have to do better every time. And it's awful.
Now, that, I feel like this is some kind of philosophical problem that you might discuss in school. Yeah, the idea that maybe... A better way to be is to underachieve as you go through life and then get better at the end.
Which is a terrible lesson to learn.
But is it a terrible lesson? Because maybe my lack of achieving things I want to achieve is actually setting me up for a better
okay,
overall...
I like that.
How much worse would it be? You know, when you think of like people who are in a boy band or you know, something like that, or they got very, very famous.
They peak too early.
They've got it all and then they lose it all.
Yes.
Surely it's better to be on a very, very slightly upward trajectory.
Yes.
Even if you never get like to the heights that you want to get to. But at least you won't have lost it all.
As someone that is still seeking out success at 32, I will abide by this philosophy and I appreciate it.
Caitlin, I must argue with you on that point because I think you're very successful.
Thank you.
You've done your Edinburgh show and you've done all these things here as well. I think it's brilliant.
I'm proud of the things I've done. I'm just still I have too much ambition in me for the other things I want to achieve, I guess.
Right. And I don't know if did I tell you about Dead Eyes, which I don't think you're supposed to talk about on the podcast, but
I think you can.
I like that podcast where they talk about you know, the failures and the misfires that you've had, because you don't always kind of hear about that. You open, you know, as someone who's done a lot of like journalism in the past, arts journalism, a lot of it is kind of, you're saying, here's this person who's very successful, telling their story about their success, their new, their big new movie, their new show, whatever. But actually, that is not the whole story.
No.
And when you're a creative person, you kind of have to deal with the knocks, and you know, not all of it, not all of your ideas are going to be successful. But hopefully, at one point, it will all come together.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting though that when someone achieves some level of success, their whole backstory is kind of rewritten to be like, it was all leading to this point, and they weren't failing at all.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, we all fall on our face, and
we do.
That needs to be spoken about more, because I think the people that are afraid to try for the more creative or non-conventional path are afraid of failure.
Yeah.
But like, we all, well, it's all failure.
Well, and I don't know if you noticed, but during your time in Britain, I think we embrace failure a lot more than here. Like, when I'm here, like, I kind of forget that actually, well, I think we're quite similar in a way, because we've both spent, you know, a bit of time in America and Britain, so you can kind of see both sides of the coin. But actually, there's a lot of kind of boastfulness here. It's winning is important, being successful is important.
It's very earnest about it here. It's very much like, I'm great, and I don't have any flaws, and look at all the things I'm doing. And then you get to know someone a little bit more, and they're like, okay, so here's why this sucks, and here's why I suck.
Exactly. But yeah, there's that kind of front, isn't there? Of like, I'm doing well, and this is great. I'm a winner. Like, let's go out and win.
Yes.
And you know full well, Caitlin, that it's not like that in Britain. We're embarrassed. Like, if you win something, you're like, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry
I've won. I'm so sorry. I've actually done really well.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm really proud of this. I'm really sorry to be, like...
Yes. Yes. Just, that's so true.
Like, modesty taken to really, really the nth degree.
Yeah.
I think we take a perverse pleasure in losing.
I think so, too. And I think there's a healthy balance in between both philosophies. Like, you shouldn't always be focusing on winning and talking about it and bragging about it, because that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, you should be able to celebrate when you've achieved something and not be apologetic or embarrassed by it.
Yes, that is completely true. I cordially invite you to Yorkshire, where I'm from, to give a speech to all the citizens of Yorkshire to tell them that it's okay to be successful.
Okay, I feel like I'll have to get really good at the Yorkshire accent, because if they hear it from my accent, they'll be like, oh, stupid Americans.
Yeah, there's not many Americans make it to...
I've been to Yorkshire.
Where did you go?
Okay.
Why have we not talked about this?
My friend... Okay, so when I was 19,
yeah,
I was a camp counselor at this camp in Connecticut that had a lot of international camp counselors.
Okay,
and
now
I had a friend.
I know what camp counselor is, but for people who don't,
it's
you're basically in a summer camp for kids.
Yes, and you're a teenager, you're a child still too, kind of, but you are leading groups of smaller children on like excursions and summer camp activities. And this was a sleepaway camp too.
Is it like Wet Hot American Summer?
Yes.
Is that
exactly like
a realistic portrait?
Yes.
I'm
Janine Garofalo now. So
you were doing that?
I was doing that, and there was a guy, Paul, who is from Yorkshire, who I could not understand whatsoever until the end of the summer, when I was like, how did I not understand him before? And then there was a guy, Dave, from Doonesbury.
From where?
Doonesbury?
What?
Doonesbury. There's no N in there. Doonesbury.
Yeah.
And I went to go visit them when I was in the UK.
Do you want to hear how they say that in Yorkshire?
Huh?
They would say, Dewsbury.
Yeah, there you go. I'm fucking it all up. Dewsbury.
Yeah.
Okay,
so Dave was from there.
Dewsbury, yeah.
And Paul was from Yorkshire as well.
Yeah. I can't remember what town he was in, but I went to it.
Yeah.
Sheffield. No, that's a different area.
That's
no.
where my brother lives.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I like Sheffield.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I love it up north.
So you were hanging out with those guys.
Yeah. And we got very drunk and went to the pub. Accident. And then woke up and their parents cooked us all a big fry up, and it was great.
That sounds The Yorkshire folk are very hospitable. That sounds like exactly the kind of thing that they would do.
It was lovely.
Did they make you a tea, but it was like almost undrinkably strong?
Yes, and I needed it in my hangover state. Right. I needed it to kick my old butt. Yeah.
So when are you going to come back and do some shows in London? Let's hang out in London.
Yes, I'm trying to figure it out. I was there in May. And all of my friends that I hadn't seen since before the pandemic were like, it was so nice because sometimes I feel like the pandemic has just like changed the trajectory. Can I speak words? Yes, I can. Of people's lives.
Have you taken more mushrooms?
I have a little bit of a lisp and I'm tripping over my
words. It is hard to say that word.
Trajectory. There we go. And like a lot of like communities and groups that I had just sort of like fell apart.
Yeah.
Whereas I came back to London and everyone was still doing it and like had achieved something even greater. Like my friend Max, who's an amazing videographer and musician, got his own studio,
photo studio.
And like my friend Laura, who's also an amazing musician, opened a venue that she's working at. And like my friend Brian, who's an incredible guitarist, like released a bunch of albums. Like everyone was still in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me realize that I used to go back like every 6 months and I want to go back more now that the pandemic is over.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to, I was going to go back at before or after Edinburgh and that just didn't work with my tourist schedule. So I'm thinking probably sometime this winter I will return.
I just lost my voice there. What?
You got really excited about me returning in the winter.
Yeah.
And your voice is gone.
I lost my voice. it would be a horrible irony if our positivity was destroyed by, you know, in a few months' time when this comes out, there's like another lockdown or something.
Oh,
people
my God,
are like, oh
no.
My God, not again.
No.
Not again. It'll be fine.
My friend Katie, who lives in Peckham, she...
Well pronounced.
Thank you. We went to Oxford together and she...
Also just, well pronounced.
Thank you. I went to Oxford. She just got so tired of the lockdowns. There was one coming and she was like, can I come stay with you, Caitlin? I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
America has no rules and it sucks and I wish that we did.
Right. Did you just go to Florida and just like...
No, I mean we were
just
like...
lick everyone.
Yes. I really got into licking in Miami. No, I mean New York had more rules. We had like a curfew and stuff. We weren't like the South, but it was still much more open than it seemed the UK was. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, so yeah, come to London.
Yeah.
And write a musical as well.
Okay.
And we'll write that song together.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. I hope you've enjoyed our little walk around Prospect Park.
This is really fun.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. If you're listening to this podcast, come to this park. It's so beautiful.
It's actually really nice. We haven't really said much about what we've seen, but it's the sun and
the runners.
Trees.
Avoid them.
Yeah.
The children running at you.
There's a lot of kids playing soccer.
Yeah. The leaves are all changing. It's gorgeous. There's lots of people with cute dogs around and babies.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
And loads of hipster people as well. I never feel cool enough in Bristol? What?
Where are you? We're in Brooklyn.
I never feel cool enough in Brooklyn.
Are you kidding?
There's always, like, you go to Bushwick or... No, we've been talking about Bed-Stuy, by the way. If you don't know, it's like Bedford-Stuyvesant. It's these two... People
that
say
is technically my neighbourhood.
Bed-Stuy, yeah. And you always see very, very cool people wearing unbelievably outlandish clothes, but just kind of owning it.
Yes. You know what's so funny about those people, though, is the more intimidating that they look, the more insecure they are deep down. So you don't have to be intimidated by them. They're great. They're lovely people. They also have the same weird fears about being a human being that we all do.
Indeed. Great way to end.
Yeah.
Caitlin Cook, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you for having me.
See you soon. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad, make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcasts from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk. And if you see me walking around in a park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming soon from the makers of Park Date, it's Stairs Date. Join me and a celebrity as we talk on some stairs.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.